The Roman Emperor Marcus Aurelius said, "The chance for progress, to keep or lose, turns on the events of a single day." I'm thinking of that quote in conjunction with what's become known as the stages of change. So much of course, my focus as a therapist is trying to help people with this elusive thing called change. Change of behavior, change of addictive actions, change in their relationship and so forth, change in their spiritual life. If they want more spirituality in their life, how do they find it? What is this process about? So again, the stages of change is there's five stages. First is pre-contemplation, meaning a person is unaware that they need to make a change, not interested in making a change. And if someone suggests making a change, it's met with resistance. Stage two is something called contemplation. Maybe I do need to take a look at something. Maybe I do need to change something, but they're not quite ready to do anything with it. And then the third is kind of move forward a little bit, going, they've contemplated they need to do something a little bit different. They're trying to figure out how to do it. It's called preparation and planning. How might I make this change? Should I reach out? I've tried by myself many times to overcome this addiction, these relationship issues, my anxiety, my depression, and I'm not making much progress. I think I need to reach out and do something about it. And then the fourth stage is action. I'm actually going to do something. I'm actually going to call. I'm actually going to start an exercise program if I want to get healthier. I'm actually going to start doing something. Watch my diet a little bit differently. And then after the person finds something that's working, the fifth and final stage is something called maintenance. This can be the most challenging stage of all. And because of our human tendencies and human weaknesses, it's not a fixed state. So when someone, it's an elusive state. So we don't, no matter how good we are, we don't completely stay in maintenance. We slip back into previous unwanted behaviors from time to time. We just need to kind of make peace with that a little bit, not beat yourself up so harshly if that happens. It's all part of the process. Real change may require repeated attempts, but there's something holy and refining in such striving, the striving to overcome, the striving to learn. Pick yourself up and keep moving forward. And that's what Angela Duckworth in her book called Grit. You just get up and you just keep trying. But the more you refine this process, the more time you actually stay in maintenance. And if we do not watch it constantly, we can easily fall back into previous patterns of behavior. So I want to talk about one of my all-time favorite books. I think it's one of the best books ever been written, really. It's called The Mind and the Brain by Dr. Jeffrey Schwartz. And man, there's so many profound insights in this book. Just one concept I want to bring out in today's podcast is that the mind and the physical brain are different things. The physical brain is the plastic, hardwired part of us that has certain connections and certain channels that have been developed through the process of our mortal life. And negative patterns, traumatic things can lay the groundwork for us to be stuck and frozen in certain places, and we keep repeating things over and over again in so many different varieties of that, whether it's addictive tendencies, anger issues, and depression, anxiety. We just seem to be the same over and over and over again. We wake up and we're just the same, struggling with the same things over and over again. Now, in Dr. Schwartz's work, he draws on the concept of quantum physics and a lot of these deeper, what I call spiritual concepts, in that the mind, and I'm not attempting to define or explain quantum physics here, all right, but just a part of it is that the mind has the capacity of a free will and a free won't. And this draws back to Viktor Frankl's classic statement, everything can be taken from a man but one thing, the last of human freedoms, to choose one's attitude in any given set of circumstances, to choose one's own way. And this is the point, between a stimulus and how we respond, free will, free won't, is a space. In that space is our power to choose our response, and in our response lies our growth and our freedom. And one of the things that I have found very useful in the clients that I work with, and it draws on what Jeffrey Schwartz talks about, is this concept of attention. Attention must be paid. And when we pay attention to something, the brain actually changes. And Dr. Schwartz's work was significant because he dealt with clients who struggled with severe obsessive compulsive disorder. And he taught them a process of being able to identify when they had an obsessive thought, whatever that thought might be. Oh, I need to flip the light switch 15 times in 15 seconds before I walk out of this room. The brain, the hardwiring of the brain, is simply misfiring. So he taught an individual to recognize that and to be able to identify it, name it, call it out. There's my brain, my hardwiring brain, doing just what it does. It's kind of stuck. He called it brain lock. There's an impulse for whatever reason, and we don't understand how or why this happens, but there is a trigger, an impulse, whatever the obsessive compulsive disorder, and it relates to addictive tendencies also. When we have a trigger, a temptation to act out a behavior that from the prefrontal part of our mind, we know is not going to be in our best interest. We know there's negative consequences, but this impulse is so strong that we just don't seem to have the capacity, or haven't trained ourselves yet, strengthened the prefrontal, the conductor, so to speak, of the orchestra of all these wild thoughts in the background. We haven't ever been taught how to strengthen the conductor so that he can manage all of these thoughts and these triggers that come from moment to moment throughout our lives. And this process is going on all the time. That the question then becomes, what are we paying attention to? And let me explain the difference between intention and attention. Attention is whatever grabs us and we're kind of focused on moment by moment. Intention is an act of agency where I am choosing to focus on this particular thing. I am choosing to set a goal to accomplish a certain thing, and then my attention is going to be fixed on this intention. For example, I'm not going to smoke a cigarette in the next 60 minutes. That's my intention. And so the attention would be make that signal stronger than the noise, just to practice restraint, just to practice it a little bit. If you're not at the place where you can totally give it up, whatever the issue is, practice small steps. Oh, there is my compulsion, craving to smoke a cigarette, as an example. Then an individual, just what do I do with that thought? I recognize it. I call it out. My brain is just doing my pleasure centers, the limbic system, hippocampus, mainly involved in memory. It knows how to feel good based on past memories. And so it's giving me an impulse to get out of whatever state that I'm in, bored, lonely, angry, stressed, or tired, anything that causes us to feel uncomfortable. Same exact scenario could be used when we feel a compulsion to go to the fridge and get some food. Research suggests that about 80% of the time we eat, it's emotional eating. We don't need it. Our bodies don't need it. And that's why we have such an issue with obesity and being overweight in our culture, because we have so much food. Food is a medication, an emotional, it provides emotional relief from stress. And so learning to have a proper relationship with that. So the same thing, you get a craving, you're doing some work and you have a craving, I'm gonna go get some chocolate. Say, there's my brain. Do I really need that chocolate? No, I don't need it, but I want it. Okay, acknowledge that. I'm gonna practice restraint for 5 minutes before I go get my M&Ms, or before I, I'm putting off smoking for 60 minutes. And if that's too long, 30 minutes, whatever. Just experience noticing the trigger, whatever it might be, acknowledging it, naming it. And these are my words. Dr. Jeffrey Swartz has a different pattern of the way he explains it. But for me, I'm just drawing what works for me from his work. But you name the trigger, call it out. There it is, capital IT. My limbic system is driving me to a certain behavior that I know from past experience has not been so helpful to me. And so I'm going to try this process of restraint, free won't. I choose not to do this thing right now. And I'm just going to sit with it for a period of time and notice how I feel. And this draws me back to an amazing book called Embracing Discomfort by Michael Easter. We need to learn to, if we really want to make progress in life, in achieving worthwhile, meaningful goals that we set for ourselves, we need to learn to make friends or be at peace with some discomfort. It's just part of the process. It's okay. Instead of being so frustrated that we're a little uncomfortable with something, go, man, this is awesome. This is work. It's work. Now, here's the interesting thing. And then this is what Dr. Jeffrey Schwartz's work, he pulled out in his book and the research is, when we are able to practice free won'ts, I'm not going to do this particular thing that I'm being tempted or the craving's hitting me to do this, our brains actually begin the process of changing. That's why it's called neuroplasticity. The brain is actually changing moment by moment, day by day. And the more we practice restraint, perhaps this is why Thucydides, the great Greek general philosopher, says of all manifestations of power, restraint impresses men the most. Being wise in our actions, looking at the long-term outcome of our behaviors rather than focusing on instant gratification. Most of those things that provide instant gratification don't really satisfy the deepest yearnings of the human soul. So take away from this podcast, I would encourage you for the rest of the day, just pay attention to when you have cravings to go eat, or if you're a smoker, to smoke or to use a drug or whatever. Just notice the craving when it hits and stop for a period of time intentionally. I choose not to do this thing right now and just embrace the discomfort of it a little bit and just watch what happens. In the process of time, if you continue to practice this, maybe you do it for, you can restrain for 5 minutes today. And then maybe tomorrow you can restrain for 7 minutes. And then next week, 20 minutes, and then 30 minutes. And then you keep the process up as your confidence begins to grow based on your actions and your past experience. Anyway, so that's a takeaway. Encourage you to practice restraint meaningfully and mindfully as it relates to food, substances, or even impulses to get on and check social media, and just restrain so that you realize that your mind really is the all-powerful thing, not your physical brain. Your physical brain is based on past experience, has learned what creates pleasure, and so it's sending the mind impulses to act, but the mind hasn't, maybe is not aware enough of its absolute power to say, no, I choose not to do that. I choose to take control of the orchestra, so to speak. I am the conductor here, not you. And I know the consequences of these behaviors, and I'm tired of these consequences. Therefore, I choose. The all-powerful part of our minds that we really do have the power to direct and change the physical brain. That's a powerful thought. Anyway, have an amazing week, amazing day, and talk to you next time.